Unfortunately, there's a little bit of audio issue on today's show. Everything has been fixed for tomorrow's show, and we tried to do our best to clean today's audio, but there was a bit of distortion. We upgraded a few things in our studio yesterday, and unfortunately, one of small details slipped by me, and the show's audio is not to the level that it usually is, but we hope that you still enjoyed today's show, and we'll be back with a better audio on tomorrow's show, but enjoy the show. Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Tuesday, January 7th, 2020. I'm Kevin Larmy, joined by Dwayne Rollins. As always, Dwayne, how you doing today?
I'm doing well, Kevin. I had a good holiday period. I enjoyed the holidays this year more than usual for some reason. Maybe I'm getting old and nostalgic and all that sort of stuff. But now here it is, January 7th, and I'd like to just make it clear I am officially done with winter now. We can get to spring. I'm over it.
You're over it. Yeah, I don't disagree, Dwayne. Winter is here for still a few weeks, if not months. We'll know in less than a month when Poxitoni Phil, what the name of the freaking groundhog when it's Groundhog Day?
I think it's Bill Murray, I think is the name of the groundhog, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, if it's not, it has to be. That might be the best name for a groundhog that you can ever find. But welcome to Soccer Today for today. Hey, Dwayne, you have a Manchester Derby later today in the League Cup.
Oh boy, that's I forgot about that. I was watching the FA Cup game on Saturday, and I took a peek at my phone. What's the next game again? And then this old guy looks at me and goes, "Are you serious?" And I looked at my phone and went, "Oh yeah, that." You know, it's a funny one. I will be curious to see how those lineups are taken today, because City, both clubs really, have had a very busy international break, or sorry, Christmas break. Not break. That's the ironic word here. Christmas period, and It's kind of a cruel joke that the League Cup sort of follows immediately after the FA Cup, which followed immediately after the insanity of the Christmas period. And, you know, be curious to see in particular what United does with the lineup, because they've already got the scalp this year, right? And realistically, City's kind of stuck in second, maybe, you know, I don't think they care between second and third all that much, really. So that's not a battle. But United, they are playing to get into that top four spot, and they may be willing to let City have this one, but then again, it becomes very touchy when you're talking about a Manchester derby, particularly in, well, not this decade, obviously. This would be the first one of this decade, of the last 10 years or so after City became what City is now. I don't think either side wants to give an inch in that, and we'll see. It should be an interesting game, and we didn't really need two more of them, I suppose, but here we are, got two more of them.
You got two more of them, and it's not today's story, though, and we'll obviously take a look at Manchester City and Manchester United later today. We'll talk about it tomorrow. A few crazy rumors for you, Dwayne, today. By the way, thank you for listening earlier on today. I know the audio is not what it used to be. We had some upgrades since yesterday, and there's some levels I need to adjust, so thank you for bearing with us this morning, and everything should be back to normal in the next show. But Dwayne, this morning, looking at news in Major League Soccer, Luka Modric on his way to DC United is one of the rumors, one of the craziest rumors I've seen this offseason. Just one of the two crazy rumors I want to talk to you about today. The 2018 Ballon d'Or rumored to go to DC United. That's a shocking rumor.
It is very shocking. Look, I think what this is a further indication of not that MLS is ready to quite get these players 3 or 4 years before when they used to. Luka Modric is a guy that might end up in Major League Soccer one day, as might Gareth Bale, Helder Golf, and golfing's really good in the United States, right? So Bale might end up here. A lot of players like that might, but they're still at a stage when they're thinking at 34, 35, not now. And this, to me, is a further indication of how this league has now become viable enough that agents can now use it to push up the bidding prices elsewhere to get those players into clubs that suit them at that period of their career. It's almost like a pair of players have four phases of their career. You know, they're beginning, they're ups, when they're going up the ladder, so to speak, that's the early part where they'll play at their hometown club or or whatever club first signed them, and then they have their core period of their career where they play for the big club and they try and chase trophies and all that. But then this third weird tier is the one where they're not quite ready to go to what they would consider to be an adventure. That's a polite way to say retirement league and adventure league, somewhere different, unique, that's going to pay them well, and their family is going to be taken care of. There's that third tier level, which a lot of players just die out at, but with the great players, they have this like third act that's not quite the top, but not quite, for them, the bottom yet. And I think that's where players like Modric and Bale, who's also rumored, are sit right now. They're not quite ready to go into their adventure period of their career yet, but maybe they go back to their original club, or which I think is Bale's most likely destination if I were to be a betting man, which I am. In terms of Modric, I'm not sure, but it just seems like a stretch too far. But hell, if they were to get him, it'd be a hell of a coup to get him. But I don't know. It seems a little far-fetched.
It would be an amazing coup, one of the biggest transfers in MLS history, if they get this done. And he could be one of the best players in MLS history if it actually happens. But when I saw that rumor, first of all, I was like, really? I was like, okay, where's, like, I can't seem to find the source of that rumor. I don't know where it's coming from. It is surprising.
The Athletic first reported it, but yeah.
Well, usually the Athletic actually has a good track record, so it is a bit surprising that a as big of a name as Luka Modric is linked not necessarily to Major League Soccer, but to DC United. But he would be a replacement for Wayne Rooney. But the thing is, I don't think Luka Modric will attract the fan base that a Wayne Rooney did in DC United, if that's the case. But we're really deep into speculation at this point.
Yeah, no, he wouldn't. I mean, Wayne Rooney, because of the nature of the Premier League, because of the nature of Manchester United, and because of the popularity of the English national team, all combined into one sort of big ball, that made Wayne Rooney a unique signing within Major League Soccer. Other than David Beckham, I cannot think of another signing. Henry, maybe, but that's a different market, kind of, that really had the same kind of push that Rooney would have. But Modric would be a better signing on the field, I think, anyway, although Rooney certainly did not. You know, you got to give credit to Rooney for what he did in Major League Soccer. He did not, you know, maybe when they were down a couple goals in stoppage in extra time against TFC in the playoff game, maybe he decided to take it easy then because he was going to Derby County. But before that, he was, very much deserved some respect for the amount of respect that he gave the league back. And that's not always the case, as we well know. Certain Liverpool legends or Juve legends might not have given the respect that Rooney did, right? So he gets that. Look, it's kind of a funny little thing to talk about these type of rumors, too. And we talk about this all the time on the show, how the league is in one hand moving away from these kind of signings, but on the other hand isn't, and probably never well, because North America is a league that, or an area, a sporting market that demands sort of at least the perception that it is among the best in the world, even if that perception is often just that. You know, what do we call MLS? In fact, we've called it this week, we've said this, the most over and underrated league at the same time, and I think that this kind of speaks to that if they bring a guy like this in. But look, as I said, this seems 2 years off. I suspect what this report is really saying, Kevin, is that they put him on their discovery list. Because you do have to put, there is a DP discovery list out there. I mean, there's 6,000 lists in Major League Soccer. So, you know, that's not surprised, but there's another one. But yeah, that's probably what it is. They've made an approach to him. I believe that. Sure, are you interested? Because often when you're chasing guys like this is probably, you know, it's a year before we hear about it and another three before it happens, because this is a long play to get a player of that stature.
Yeah, for sure. And the other crazy rumor that you alluded to, it is Gareth Bale. So two Madrid players, and Madrid's not necessarily having its best season, and there are two of big names of Madrid right now, but Gareth Bale is linked with the LA Galaxy and Inter Miami. And Gareth Bale to Major League Soccer would be as big of a coup as Luka Modric, but might have even a better performance in Major League Soccer. Like, if I had money, if I was owner of a club, sporting director of a club, with a big amount of money, Gareth Bale would be my target. His size, his type of play, when I see him play with the Wales national team, so with teammates that are not necessarily up to his level, we do see how he helps everyone around him be better, become better. A little taller, everyone's a little more talented when they play with Bale. So can you imagine how well that would play in Major League Soccer, where Gareth Bale could make his teammates and his team a whole lot better, and that would be a great DP.
Yeah, it could potentially be, for sure. I mean, he's, as you say, a muscular player, and I think you have to have a bit of that athleticism. And it was one of the reasons I was quite surprised that Wayne Rooney was as successful as he was in Major League Soccer, because Rooney's never really been known for his fitness, right? So the fact that he competed, he's always been strong, though, so there's that. And I think if Bale came in motivated, then certainly there would be no reason to suggest that he wouldn't be dominant on the field, that he wouldn't, you know. Jozy Altidore is a player in this league that, because of his physicality and strength and ability to sort of bring, you know, to feed off of the players around him, is a very successful player in Major League Soccer. So, you know, that's face facts here, folks. Gareth Bale is like Jozy Altidore times 10. So yeah. I think that he would be quite successful, clearly. He's a bit of a homebody, famously. You know, he likes to golf and eat with dinner with his family. Like, that's Gareth Bale. So this isn't a player that I think would come over to Miami to come to South Beach. He'd be coming to Fort Lauderdale. Well, I'm sure there's a few golf courses around there that he could enjoy, and I don't think in North America that anyone would complain, unlike Madrid, if Gareth Bale were to go golfing after practice every day.
No one would actually realize it, because no one on the golf club would actually know Gareth Bale. Like, who's that guy? And that's, I guess, one of the attractions of Major League Soccer for these big names, too. Like, ask Gareth Bale if he can walk in Madrid in peace.
Well, no, I mean, or in Cardiff, or in London, yeah.
Anywhere in Europe. But that's a big attraction for some of these players. But Gareth Bale to Major League Soccer is another crazy rumors today. And there's a few others. There's a Monterrey striker linked to Major League Soccer that makes a lot more sense. But when I look at Gareth Bale, Luka Modric, and the feasibility of these two moves, yeah, I would maybe use your famous 1% chance that both these transfers actually go through.
Well, long-term, as I said, is a different case than immediate. I mean, this is very late in the day for people to have this, thinking this is going to happen for this transfer window. And we also don't know what kind of money that these players or these teams are going to be dealing with in terms of a salary cap. And as much as DPs are above and beyond the salary cap, it still kind of matters a little bit if you don't know. Because, I mean, who knows? They might, you know, there has been some speculation, particularly comes when the extra money, Tam Gam, that they might just loop it into the cap itself. And then you have to really be, you have to manage things differently. And it makes it very, very challenging. As I said, the other part of this, too, is that it's a long play. And when you're talking about players of this stature, I mean, you said Madrid's not having a great season. That's true for them. Clear caveat there.
Obviously, but, obviously, like, if they're not first or last, that's the Madrid reality. So that's what I mean.
But they are in the round of 16 of the Champions League, drawn against Manchester City, of course. That's a hell of a tie. One of those teams is out. One of those teams is in the quarterfinal. And if you're going to bet against Real Madrid in the quarterfinals of the Champions League, then you probably shouldn't be betting, because that's not a good bet. This is a team that thrives in that competition, and if you're those players, you might want to stick around to the end of that, and you're going to make any big move, particularly a move like this, which in the European mindset would signal the end of your truly competitive career. You're going to wait to the summer. So this is not a January move that we're talking about here. This is a long play that at the very, very earliest would be July, August this year.
And that's at the very earliest, if not maybe 2022, July 2022. But that's what we think about the crazy MLS rumors. Do you think Luka Modric or Gareth Bale will make it to Major League Soccer in 2020? Let us know on social media at SoccerTodaySPN, at Kev Larmer for myself, and at 24th Minute for Dwayne. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll look at Jonathan Tanenbaum's article on VAR and how Major League Soccer will not follow England.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at SoccerTodaySPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/SportsPodcastingNetwork. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back on Soccer Today. Ken Alarmi with Dwayne Rollins. As always, last Friday, our first audio documentary came out. It is available for your listening pleasures. $10 a month will give you access to the documentary about the Gold Cup and Gold Quest, how Canada won the 2000 Gold Cup with Carlo Corazon, golden boot of this Gold Cup. Jim Brennan, a young Jim Brennan, a former TFC player, TFC assistant, now manager of York 9 Football Club in the Canadian Premier League, joined Dwayne and I to look at the 2000 Gold Cup, game reports, anecdotes, and audio clips available in this audio documentary on our Patreon page at patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork. Of course, if you're listening to us and wondering, oh, Canada's playing later today. Yes, Canada's playing a close game with Barbados today. And on the 10th, we'll have more for you on the Two Solitudes Soccer Podcast later today, looking into the roster, the games, and getting ready for the Iceland game next week. But Dwayne, you know, when I look at Major League Soccer, I look at VAR. We've been used to video assistant referee and the video replay for over 2 years now at Major League Soccer. It has taken England literally by storm, but that line is not coming to MLS. That crazy line of millimeter to millimeter on the screen that the FA and the Premier League has been using, according to Jonathan Tannenwald, is not coming to Major League Soccer, and that's a good thing.
No, for sure. I mentioned the old guys, the old Manx that I watch City games with sometimes, and how they're a little grumpy about of all things North American soccer. I've talked about that in the past. I was having a conversation about VAR with him, as every conversation around English football seems to tend towards nowadays. And one of them looks at me and goes, "I can't believe I'm about to say this," in his Manchester accent. MLS gets this right. MLS has it right. MLS lets the referee still have a great degree of control. It's just a second look for the referee. And this is the primary difference we've talked about before. England, for some reason, like, they went from 0 to 100 in 3 seconds is basically what happened with English VAR implementation. They, of course, didn't have it last year. They bring it in this year, and they don't, for whatever reason. Well, I know what reason it is. They're paranoid about delaying the game too much by having the referee go to the sideline. So they thought that that was the biggest problem with VAR. Well, what we're finding out is that, no, that's really not the biggest problem. And if you just let whoever is in the middle go and have a quick look at what they want to have a look at, like, I'm not sure about that, let me look again. And then the clear and obvious criteria really comes into play, because they're not using lines and wires and all that sort of stuff. And a lot of that stuff, a lot of those calls, like, we had several of them on the Boxing Day lineups where teams would be like inches, millimeters offside based on the lines. And there's a whole conversation about technology that says that those lines, there's a degree of error that doesn't even necessarily make those relevant calls anyway.
Like, 6 inches. The margin of error is 6 to 8 inches, which is literally the buffer zone that I've been talking about, that Derek Ray's been talking about, and that multiple commentators have been talking about. There should be a buffer zone. And the literal margin of error is more than the line itself. So,
Well yeah, this is the equivalent of, like, of naming your prime minister or president based on the polls rather than the actual election result, right? Like, there's the margin of error is 3 to 5% or whatever it is in most of those polls. So that's kind of what we're doing here. There's a 3 to 5% error range here, but that will just be, seems right. We'll just go with that, right? No, no one would accept that. But yes, this is a situation where I guess it's because when it's on TV, they've decided that, you know, you can see it and it looks like it might be a centimeter off, people aren't instinctively, because they're partisan when it comes to their football, are going to be reactive immediately to the idea, well, that was offside. Well, look, no one is happy now. And I would go so far as to say, if you hear the chant that you hear all over England, and for politeness, I won't repeat it here, but it involves, you know, a word that rhymes with puck and VAR. So you hear that all over. And that's, I think, not just, I think most fans unlike what people suggest, are no longer even that excited about it when it helps their team. Like, if you see your team benefit from a millimeter offside goal, you don't feel good about it. You're like, okay, well, you're a person, you're cheering. Yeah. So you're happy the goal's gone, but you know deep down in your heart that you didn't deserve it. And it's not satisfying anyone.
And it's not
the referee. Sorry, Kevin, jump in, and then I'll finish my thought.
I was going to say, and it's not what it's there for. This is not to call a millimeter or not and say, oh, you're offside because your fingernail was further than the defender. No, the idea behind VAR, and that's where you mention it, it's still very important. It's to fix clear and obvious error. If you need to use a line to see if the guy's offside, guess what? It's not that clear. It's not that obvious.
And exactly. And so if what this was ideally designed for, as you say, wasn't when they clear and obvious is muddied now, like that term. It's like something that's blatantly bloody well obvious that, oh, we really missed that. It is, you know, Henri palming the ball into the goal against Ireland. It is Maradona volleyball spiking the ball into the goal against England.
Well, yeah. And, you know, I like, this is one of my pet peeves, I like to use sometimes one instance, change a few things, and use a different way to imagine. So instead of calling it VAR, let's call it video evidence, and let's go into court. Which one would hold up in court, right? If it's that tight that you need a line, guess what? It's not incriminating enough that you won't sentence someone. You won't make someone be guilty in court if you need that thing to, like, it needs to be clear, right? The glove either fits or it doesn't. It should have fit and it should have gone to jail. That's what we mean by clear and obvious error. So if it wouldn't hold up in a court of law, well, it shouldn't hold up on VAR. And sometimes perception is reality. And in England, you don't have the perception that the referee is still managing the game. You do not have him going to the sideline, watching that video, then making the call, going back on the field. You just have the screen and the decision there. And that is counterintuitive, but it actually takes more time to see the guy with the line and to adjust him, and you see him make the calculations on the screen. It took 5 minutes on Saturday and Sunday, example, when Aguero scored against Port Vale. It took like minutes and minutes, and Aguero didn't score because he thought he was going to be offside, and he thought it was going to, so he didn't celebrate. There was a lot of confusion, and it took like 5 minutes before the decision took. It would have taken less time than that to just send the referee to the screen, make him look at it, and everyone has a perception that the referee took the decision, and that perception is as important at the actual decision-making process by the referee or not.
Yeah, well, exactly. You know, look, what I would do with VAR.
Yeah, fire it into the sun.
I am not a fan of video replay as a philosophy, but I understand that I am in the minority of the world because, you know, this is just the way the world goes, that it has to, if there's an evidence that you might be wrong, they want to correct it. I get that. But at the very least, I think if the visual eye can't pick it up on the replay, then exactly, it's move on. And that just, there should be a countdown clock on it too, like 30 seconds. Ref goes to the board. If you can't tell within 30 seconds, it's clearly not clear and obvious.
Yeah, that's true. It's clearly not obvious, yes.
Yes, exactly. It's like that. That's the point we're making with this. The other thing, too, in England, like, God, like, they have screwed this up more than any other country. There is no doubt about it. Like, a cynic might suggest that I am running the VAR program and I'm trying to make it so bloody bad that it gets scrapped.
Well, maybe your cynicism is bang on for once. I wouldn't be surprised because the biggest blowback of VAR before it happened was from England. So maybe it is not a coincidence after all.
Yeah, because the other part of it, of course, is that they're not overturning clear errors, and which I think it frustrates more people than that. Like, if someone is clearly fouled in the box and the referee misses it, that's what I think fans would like to see taken out of the game, or the shirt pulling, or all that sort of stuff. But they don't overturn that, just this offside stuff. Like, why is this the hill you're dying on? Like, it's so bizarre. And we're all so, like, you can't help but talk about it. You know, I'm sure there are people out there that tune out as soon as our conversation comes up, but the reality is, it is a major talking point this year, and that's unfortunate that this will be just like, I've done this comparison before, get the bingo cards out, I'm about to make a hockey reference. This is just like the 1999 NHL season where the skate in the crease rule existed until there was a moment that it was incredibly inconvenient for the NHL to overturn a goal, being an overtime winning goal to win the Stanley Cup.
Oh, Brett Hall winning the Stanley Cup with that goal with the skate into the blue paint. But that's a good example.
And they scrapped it.
They scrapped it, yeah. And they're going to have to be a lot of... at least dialing it down of VAR, and I've been saying this for a week and a half now, send Howard Webb to show them how to do it properly. But the more you mention it, maybe it is on purpose, by design, to do VAR bad in England so that they scrap it after next year.
I hear lots of people, mostly on this side of the Atlantic, comment that you can't close the barn door once it's open, or the cows are fled, you can't get them back in, whatever that saying is, I'm mixing it up in my head, but that you can't roll back the clock, basically. I disagree. I absolutely think that soccer, among all of the sports, because it has a conservative streak to it, because it's so old and it's so ingrained in the culture in so many places, that I absolutely could see someone going, no, we don't want to do this. They've done it before with Golden Goal.
I was going to say Golden Goal was an experiment, and it didn't last that long, did it?
Yeah, and it's because they were, the conservative forces within the game didn't like the idea that you could be done like that, that you couldn't, have a chance to come back, that a team could get a fluky goal on the run and just win automatically. It's something that we in North America accept, right? Like, what sudden death overtime in hockey is... been part of the culture forever, so it's just something we accept. But in the rest of the world, it wasn't, and they scrapped it after a couple of years. Even though I thought it was it added excitement to the game, that was probably my North American attitude coming out there. So well, they have reverse course. Before,
it's because we used it to win the 2000 Gold Cup. Richard Hastings famously scoring on Mexico in extra time. I'm not sure Canada would have won that game if it wasn't for the golden goal, because Mexico would have come back and scored maybe twice before the end of extra time, and maybe would have lost that game in the quarters. But that's an example of it. And we'll see if VAR goes the way of the golden goal in England, or if it goes the way to the rest of soccer and just continues. But before we say goodbye for today, Dwayne, I want to mention to you Transfer Market, the famous website that does have some information on players, their value, their history, and their potential in the world of football, has came out today and given their few great top talent to watch in 2020. And who would have thought that a young Canadian would be number one on that list?
Jonathan David? No, it's still Fonzie Davis.
It's Fonzie's, but you could have been right too.
Yeah, there's moves happening in Belgium too. So keep an eye on Jonathan David this transfer window. There is a potential right there. Yeah, Alphonso Davies has had a remarkable half. He is, by stats, by who scored. I like who scored. He is the top ranked left back in all of Germany right now. That is remarkable for this kid, that a lot of people don't even think that's his natural position, himself included. He came out on record saying that he feels he's a winger. However, he is adjusting pretty well to life as a fullback, and that is giving him an opportunity that he is taking and running with. Transfer Market valuing him where he does, that's kind of irrelevant, because Bayern ain't selling him. And it's nice to see, and it'll be interesting to see whether he continues to start for the rest of this year. I can't see why he wouldn't. Whether he gets more shots at playing higher up the pitch is the question, and I kind of feel that they will probably rein him in a little bit this year more to get his defensive side of the game down. That is, particularly in the league games, I think that might be part of the purpose of them playing him consistently there. They know what he can do forward. They know what kind of instincts he has going forward. They know that when they take the leash off that he will run, and then he will run free and creatively and do all those good things, but they need to be able to have him play with the leash on too. It's your dog can run free and do lots of tricks without the leash, but if he can't walk properly without pulling you into traffic, it's no good, right? So you need to train Davies in the same way that you train your puppy. I'm sure, Kevin, that's an analogy you might be able to understand right now with your new puppy.
Very much so, and I have to say, yeah, it's very true. Maybe the best analogy in the history of soccer today.
there you go. So it's got to. I think this is a good thing. This is why the Canadian fans that they get upset with him playing at the back, I shake my head at that, because if you can teach Alphonso Davies to be versatile and play left back consistently for both the national team and at the club level, then it's only a benefit to the national team program. You can always move him up on you know, when he's playing Haiti or something, and he'll do what he does. But if they're in Mexico, they're in Azteca, you're going to want to play defensively, and you don't want to not have Davies on the pitch. So having his ability to play a defensively responsible game from the fullback position, still with that Mexico, for instance, in this case, would have to respect, I think is a good thing, a beneficial thing. And, you know, I think maybe they should have been a little bit, well, a lot went wrong with that game against the United States, right? And the 4-1 loss. And a big part of that was that Davies didn't have a good game. And I think that Davies was a little too free with how he was playing that day and was pulling himself out of position in his desperate attempt to come back after that early goal. And that's an indication of this kid's youth. And I that's why I like the fact that he's playing, yeah, playing fullback. This is a long-winded way of me saying that I like that Byron's playing him at fullback this year. I don't care that they're not playing him in the wing. I hope eventually he gets to play up there, but I'm happy with him playing there this year.
I agree. And I think it's a long-term project. And you mentioned the freedom. Less freedom means probably you don't second guess yourself. You know what you need to do. And for a young player, it is very useful. But on that note, Dwayne and I will say goodbye for today. We'll work on tomorrow's show. Again, thank you for your patience on today's show. If the audio is a bit too loud, we apologize. We just had a bunch of upgrades since yesterday in the studio. We're fine-tuning the audio to make sure that it's back to normal tomorrow. But on that note, you can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Laramie, and this show at Soccer Today SPN. We're back at 11 a.m. tomorrow and the rest of the week. We have some great guests scheduled to talk about Major League Soccer, USL, more, and the draft, of course, is happening on a Friday. But as always, you can find our Patreon feed at patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork for $2, $5, and $10. Three available tiers: $2 for the Two Sawtooth Soccer Podcast tier, $5 for SPN Extra, and $10 for the documentary tier, with the first documentary available right now, A Gold Quest, How Canada Won the 2000 Gold Cup. But for Dwayne Rollins, I'm Kevin Laramie, and until tomorrow, we wish you a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcasts.